Ekatra Podcast Conversations, for the curious essential knowledge, simplified. Your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive.
Today, we are immersing ourselves in a book that really fundamentally challenges one of the most basic things in modern society, our cultural pressure to be polite. Mm-hmm. We are diving deep into Gavin de Becker's, well, seminal work, The Gift of Fear.
Yeah, this is a read that completely reorients your perspective on personal safety. It really does.
Oh, so?
Well, the central thesis is pretty revolutionary because it tells you that true gut-level fear, it's not a weakness. It's not something you should be ashamed of or, you know, just dismiss.
Right, like it's an overreaction.
Exactly. Mm. Instead, de Becker argues it's this powerful, highly evolved, life-saving survival signal. It's a kind of innate intuition that's actually working to protect you.
So it's like the ultimate personal security manual in a way. And it matters because, well, all of us, but maybe especially women and children, we've been dangerously conditioned by society.
Conditioned how? Well, we're taught that politeness, logic, rationalizing a situation away, that those things are somehow superior to that immediate, sharp, almost illogical signal that just screams, something is wrong here.
Yeah, that conditioning is the enemy of safety. Absolutely. And this book, it acts as the manual to sort of undo it.
Okay.
It gives you permission, really, to trust your gut feeling without needing some kind of external validation. You don't need proof. De Becker's key insight, and this is huge, is that violence is almost never random. It's actually a predictable process.
A process.
Yeah, it's preceded by specific warning signs. And if we learn the language of these pre-incident indicators, as he calls them, we stop being sort of passive targets and we start reclaiming our innate ability to actually prevent threats.
Okay, so let's talk briefly about the man who gave us this insight, Gavin de Becker. He is absolutely recognized as one of America's foremost experts on predicting and managing violence.
Yeah, he really is.
He's the founder of Gavin de Becker and Associates, GDBA, which is this, you know, premier security consulting firm. They protect major public figures, corporations.
So he's seen a lot.
Definitely. His professional authority is immense.
And he's the mind behind the Mosaic Threat Assessment System, which, simply put, is this really powerful tool used by agencies like, well, the CIA, the U.S. Supreme Court.
Wow.
Yeah, to categorize and predict potentially violent behavior. Yeah. It's all based on patterns and indicators. He's basically making a science out of predicting human intent.
But what truly sets his work apart, I think, what makes it so resonant and authoritative is that his professional expertise is rooted in some pretty harrowing personal experience.
Exactly. That's the key. He grew up surrounded by intense violence. He actually recounts witnessing his drug-addicted mother shoot and kill his abusive stepfather.
Oh, my goodness.
In an act of self-defense during his childhood. So that lived trauma, that sort of necessity of survival in a really volatile environment, that, combined with decades of clinical threat assessment, gives his work this rare blend.
What kind of blend?
Clinical precision on one hand, but also profound empathy for the survivor on the other. He's not just, you know, studying the problem from afar.
Right.
He's someone who learns survival at a really fundamental level.
That connection feels vital. It's not just some academic theory. It's knowledge that's been, well, battle tested.
Yeah, absolutely.
So let's dive into the core message. The book's main purpose seems to be to completely redefine your relationship with fear itself.
Right. He meticulously distinguishes between two concepts we often just lump together, true instinctual fear and then generalized anxiety.
Okay, what's the difference then?
True fear is specific, it's immediate, and it focuses you on the present threat, like, you know, seeing a flash flood actually coming towards you.
Right now, in the moment.
Exactly. Anxiety, on the other hand, is vague, it's prolonged, and it's often future-focused, like worrying about flying, even though you're perfectly safe on the ground right now.
That differentiation feels crucial because most of us, probably, spend our lives kind of drowning in this manufactured anxiety over things that are pretty improbable.
Mm-hmm.
But then we ignore that sharp, instantaneous, specific fear signal right when it actually matters.
And we ignore it because, well, de Becker dismantles the common myths we tell ourselves, like that violence is random or that it's unpredictable or that it's only committed by, you know, monstrous strangers out of the blue.
The scary movie version?
Kind of, yeah. He replaces those comforting but actually false fallacies with the truth. Violence is a predictable process. It has a grammar, he says.
A grammar? Like language.
Exactly. And if you learn the grammar, you can read the sentence before it finishes. You can see where it's going.
So the goal isn't to live in constant fearfulness.
No, not at all.
But to achieve what he calls a state of quiet, confident awareness. So we move through the world confidently because we know how to read the signals and, crucially, how to act on them immediately, without hesitation.
It is deeply empowering. That's the feeling you get from it. The book aims to make you an active agent in your own safety by teaching you to recognize these pre-incident indicators, or PENS, as he abbreviates them.
PENS. Okay, let's unpack the core mechanism here. Intuition. We love to mystify it, make it sound like magic, but De Becker really grounds it in science. It's not magic, is it?
No, not at all. Intuition is simply high-speed, pattern-based data processing. That's it.
Okay, break that down.
Your brain, drawing on millions of sensory inputs and, like, all your past experiences, recognizes patterns and anomalies instantly, just way too fast for your conscious, logical mind to articulate why it feels wrong.
So it's processing faster than we can think.
Pretty much, yeah. It's our most sophisticated predictive system, actually, and it works perfectly, unless we consciously override it, which we do all the time.
Right, so the key takeaway is your intuition already has the answer. Our job isn't to try and justify the feeling logically, oh, does this make sense? It's just to listen to the messengers.
The messengers.
Yeah, the physical tension, the sudden chill, that nagging hunch. But here's the friction point. Why is it so damn hard to listen? And that's because of these PENs, right?
Precisely. The 7 pre-incident indicators are these specific manipulative tactics that predators use. They use them to bypass your intuition, gain your trust, test your boundaries, and ultimately isolate you.
Okay.
Let's maybe walk through the most common ones, focusing on the sort of social manipulation that's baked into each one.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's start with the one that feels maybe most familiar. Forced teaming.
Okay, forced teaming. This is when someone creates a premature, totally false sense of shared experience or common purpose. They do it to establish intimacy or maybe obligation really quickly.
How does that sound?
They use the word we before we actually exists. Like, oh, we seem to be struggling with this rain, or hey, let us go look for the manager together. They're trying to shortcut the natural, gradual development of trust.
And we feel obligated to respond positively because rejecting that we feels rude, unfriendly.
Exactly. Which leads directly to the second one, charm and niceness. We're taught to adore charm, right? But De Becker calls it a tool.
A tool.
Yeah. Charm in this context is a directed verb. It's something someone does to you. It's not just a personality trait. Truly kind people are often just nice, maybe quietly nice.
Okay.
Charm, when it's used manipulatively, is a means to disarm you, speed up intimacy, and make you feel guilty if you don't reciprocate their attention or eventually their demands. It makes rejecting them feel socially unforgivable.
Okay, that makes sense. The next one is often a marker of deception, you said. Too many details.
Yeah. When someone is lying or maybe just trying to conceal an uncomfortable truth, they often compensate by just drowning you in excessive, irrelevant details.
Why?
They're trying to hide the central lie or the uncomfortable part behind this mountain of authentic sounding but ultimately unnecessary information. So if the explanation is like 3 times longer than it needs to be, pay attention.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Then there's loan sharking. Sounds ominous.
It is, in a way. This is offering unsolicited help doing something for you that you didn't ask for, specifically to create a feeling of indebtedness.
Oh, so now you feel like you owe them.
Exactly. Now you feel you owe them something, which makes it incredibly difficult to say no to the next request, which is usually bigger or more invasive.
Wow. Okay, the absolute deal breaker you mentioned, the most crucial PI, is discounting the word no.
This is the critical red flag. Absolutely critical. Anyone who refuses to accept your simple refusal, doesn't matter if it's about sharing a detail about your life or accepting an unwanted gift or changing your mind about some plan,
yeah.
If they won't take no for an answer, they are signaling their intent to control you. They're showing they disregard your self-interest. They're testing your boundaries right there to see if they can just ignore your self-protection mechanism.
That's 5. We need to touch on the final 2, which often catch people unaware, I think.
Right. 6th is typecasting. This is a more subtle verbal manipulation.
Yeah.
It puts you on the defensive.
Like
it sounds like, oh, you're probably too kind to help me out with this, or maybe you're not one of those rude people, are you? They're using a slightly negative label that you instinctively want to avoid.
Right, you want to prove them wrong.
Exactly, to pressure you into proving them wrong by complying with whatever they want.
Sneaky. And finally, unsolicited promises.
Yeah. any promise that comes way too early in an interaction, or maybe it's just too emphatic, that should raise suspicion. If someone immediately says, look, I promise I'm only going to be a minute, or I promise I won't touch anything.
When you didn't even ask.
Exactly. When you didn't even ask them to promise anything, it often signals that they know they're violating a boundary or about to, and they're trying to sort of preemptively quell your apprehension before you even voice it.
It's genuinely chilling how these pins played out in that main case study DeBecker uses, the story of Kelly, the woman in the apartment building.
Her story just perfectly exemplifies this tyranny of niceness. A man approached her with groceries, right? He used forced teaming. Let us get these inside.
Right.
Loan sharking, helping without being asked, charm.
And her gut was screaming.
Her intuition was absolutely screaming by her own account later, but she kept thinking, oh, I don't want to be rude. He seems nice. He's helping me. She ignored every single internal signal, dismissed all those pins, mm-hmm. allowed him access to her apartment building, and was tragically assaulted. She prioritized his perceived comfort over her own very real screaming sense of danger. And that is the core lesson.
It's jarring to realize how often we choose that temporary social comfort or avoiding awkwardness over the actual truth of a situation,
yeah.
even when our safety is literally at stake.
Yeah.
Let's maybe synthesize some of the key themes that come out of this whole understanding.
Okay. Well, the most fundamental shift, as we kind of said at the start, is that true fear is a gift, not a weakness. We have to stop seeing fear as some kind of flaw in ourselves. Instead, treat it as a specific, immediate biological asset. It's there for a reason. If you feel fear, it's not a prediction of the future. It's a commentary on the present. Something right now requires your immediate attention and action.
And for many people, I think the most liberating theme is challenging the tyranny of niceness. And that mantra, no, is a complete sentence.
Absolutely liberating.
It forces us to internalize that predators actively exploit that cultural pressure we feel to be polite, especially towards strangers or even acquaintances who kind of pretend to need help.
You have the absolute right to refuse anything without needing to justify it. The moment you feel like you have to offer an excuse for your refusal, oh, I can't because, you've already ceded control.
Right.
If someone demands justification for your no, they're already displaying that, discounting no PIN. They're showing you who they are.
And this applies everywhere, doesn't it? If you're dismissing a hunch about maybe a demanding boss or a controlling colleague, you're prioritizing social harmony or job security over your own internal data.
Yeah, you are.
And that leads to the third major theme, I think. Denial is the predator's greatest ally.
DeBecker frames denial perfectly. He calls it a save now, pay later scheme.
Save now, pay later.
Yeah. It's the immediate temporary relief you get from rationalizing away the warning signs. You know, oh, he's probably just having a rough day, or maybe I'm just overreacting.
We've all done that.
Of course. But by retreating into that temporary comfort, you allow a potentially dangerous situation to escalate. And that forces you to pay a much, much higher price later on. The book really urges you, address uncomfortable truths the moment your intuition flags them. Don't wait.
The phrasing throughout this book is just so sharp, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's probably why it has so many memorable lines that really stick with you long after you put it down.
Definitely. We've used the most famous one a few times, but let's reiterate it because it's just such an essential mantra for personal sovereignty. No is a complete sentence.
Just that. Nothing else needed. Another key insight that really redefined my understanding of immediate danger was, when you feel fear, you are not predicting the future. You are predicting the present. It is happening now.
Yeah, that cuts through all the anxious what ifs.
Right. It cuts through the anxiety and focuses you immediately on action. What do I do now?
And going back to the manipulative nature of one of the pinnists, there's that powerful observation that charm is the unwilling tango partner of violence.
Ooh, that's evocative. It reminds us that charm often serves as a deliberate tool, specifically used to disarm potential victims and make them comfortable enough to ignore their own gut feelings.
Exactly. And one more, which speaks directly to the self-protective nature of intuition. Worry is a sustained state. Fear is an event.
Like the anxiety versus fear distinction again.
Precisely. If you're stuck in worry, you're actually distracted, you're less aware. If you feel true fear, you are hyper-focused on survival.
Okay, so this is all incredibly powerful. But how do we operationalize these ideas, you know, today, right now, in our actual real lives?
Great question. Let's start with just general public safety. Next time you are walking alone, Maybe it's in a parking garage, maybe on a quiet street, and you feel that specific internal signal of unease, that gut feeling.
Yeah.
You must treat it as valid data, not paranoia, not overreaction, data. And act on it immediately.
What does acting look like?
Cross the street, change directions abruptly, duck into a store, call someone on your phone, and speak loudly. You don't need to justify this action to anyone, not even yourself later. You just need to honor the signal your body is sending you.
Okay. And this seems incredibly valuable when evaluating new relationships, too. Especially maybe when dealing with someone who seems to be moving way too fast.
Absolutely. Use the PKENs as red flag detectors in early dating, or even friendships or professional contacts.
Mm-hmm.
Look for signs of control. Is there inappropriate intensity? Are they trying to isolate you from your friends or family? Extreme jealousy. Discounting your no, even on really minor matters. If someone is testing your boundaries now with small things, it's a pretty strong indication they plan to disregard them entirely later on when the stakes are higher.
That makes sense. And finally, for parenting, De Becker urges us to focus less on teaching kids these vague rules about strangers, which can actually confuse them.
Right, because often the danger isn't a stranger.
Exactly. And focus more on helping them tune into their internal signals.
Yes. Teach children to trust their internal feelings about a situation or about an adult, regardless of whether that adult is someone they know or not. We need to empower them with the absolute authority to say no, forcefully if needed, to any adult who makes them feel uncomfortable or unsafe.
And reinforcing the message that their safety is paramount.
Absolutely. It trumps any adult's demands for politeness or obedience, period.
Thinking back on this whole deep dive, I think the most impactful realization for me is just how genuinely empowering this knowledge is. Knowing that violence often is predictable, it replaces that paralyzing sense of anxiety about random acts with a feeling of confident capability. It's a profound shift, isn't it? From feeling like a potential victim to feeling like your own guardian.
That's exactly it. The ultimate lesson here really is self-empowerment. We have these innate, incredibly reliable tools for survival, honed over millennia, built right into our cognition, our bodies.
We just don't use them.
We often don't. We simply need to give ourselves permission. Permission to be rude if necessary, permission to be perceived as difficult, and crucially, permission to trust ourselves without requiring external proof or validation. Your intuition is your most complex and capable security system. Listen to it.
A deeply valuable and, I think, essential insight for every single listener. Thank you.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.